Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. Today I'm joined by Dominic Maxwell, theatre critic for The Times, to see what's on the London stage this week. We have three plays based on classic texts today, including the Almeida Theatre's new production of Shakespeare's Richard III, an Australian play that takes its storyline from King Lear called The Shadow King, and we'll assess the success of the stage version of George Orwell's 1984. That's all coming up on the Monocle Arts Review. Dominic Maxwell, welcome to the show as ever. Now, your first pick takes us to the Almeida Theatre for a new production of Shakespearean tragedy Richard III, starring Ralph Fiennes as Richard and Vanessa Redgrave as Queen Margaret. The Washington Post said of this that, in the larger picture, this play is a potent spectacle of just how bad leadership can be. Perhaps a timely moment to put this on the stage, given what's happening in the news here, Dominic.
God, I wondered how you'd segue into that. Yes.
Right into it, I think.
Yes. It is, in my paper, Anne Treneman said it's like a one-man show. And I think that's both what's good and what's bad about this production. No, not bad. What's limited about this production. It's Rupert Gould, one of our best directors, who often puts on a real whiz-bang show. He's almost gone to the other extremes here, a little bit like he did with King Charles III. He's made it very austere, and he's focused on the lead performance. He's let Ralph Fiennes have his head. I think Fiennes is, as you would expect, fantastic. He is one of our most commanding, charismatic, all the C words, stage actors. He's hard to ignore, even he's hard to take your eyes off as Richard. For me, the limitations of this is the rest of the production felt flat. There were points at which you could see the others standing around, listening, as if they'd been told, just stand there and watch. And somehow, magically, in a good production, you don't notice that. This isn't a bad production, it's a pretty good production. But I was very aware that there seemed to be a lack of internal life elsewhere.
Is that because they are up against a talent, as you say, like Ralph Fiennes? I'm a fan of Ralph Fiennes. I think he's a spectacular film actor. It does strike me that he's not exactly what you would call a foreboding presence. He's not someone who can come across as bombastic and a little bit hard to compete with. Sometimes he is irritatingly subtle to the point where you really feel you need to pay so much attention to him. How does that come across on the stage?
I think you'd find. Have you seen him on stage?
Unfortunately, I have not. He's not been to Australia very often. I haven't been in London quite long enough yet.
Okay, he's big, and I don't mean that as a criticism. He is, you know, one of those huge presences. He was that in the Ibsen, whose name I've forgotten. He was in early this year at the Old Vic, and in Man and Superman at the National Theatre last year. He's one of those huge theatre performers who makes the room feel small, however big it is. So he has that kind of control of breath, body, text that dominates. And what you want is someone to match up to him. Now, given Richard III, it is a show to have fun with, to caper about with, to really dig deep into the evil of this man with. And you want him to do all that. But I felt that he needed more opposition. There was a sort of star guest, effectively, in the form of Vanessa Redgrave.
And how is she in this? Because I think she's wonderful as well.
Yeah, I think she's wonderful too. However, what I would say is the production sort of slows down to a stop to bring her on. It's quite a small part. And it's almost as if they're trying to get their maximum Vanessa Redgrave for their money. So the whole thing slows down. She comes on, she underplays it very nicely. She doesn't always do that. It's beautiful, but it feels as if they're stretching out that bit to signify her importance. And I thought I just wanted them to get a bit of a move on, really. It's 3.25 hours, and that's, you know, there have been longer ones, but I felt it could have been done half an hour shorter.
What's the argument for having a play that is that long? I mean, despite the fact that it, of course, is a Shakespearean tragedy, so it's okay to make Shakespeare really as long as you like. But things can be adapted, things can be shortened, things can be put into a bit of an easier-to-digest package. What's the argument for going for 3.5 hours?
Ooh, well, I guess you just say the writing's really rather good, isn't it? And, you know, when it is good, when the production's great, you don't feel 3.5 hours. I'm sure you've been to sort of hour-long shows that feel like they last a day, and you've been to 3.5 hour shows you don't want to end. Like I say, because I think it was slightly unbalanced, this production, that for me is why it felt long. I don't think, you know, I'm not advocating necessarily always doing cuts. I think there may be some of the comedies I saw, Trevor Nunn's A Midsummer Night's Dream, this week as well, which we won't talk about. But just to mention, that was, I think, about 3 hours. And I think for comedy, for that comedy in particular, probably there should be a 2.5 hour cap. I think that's okay on Richard III in theory. Just in this case, I found it dragged.
Well, that is Richard III. It's on at the Almeida Theatre with Ralph Fiennes and Vanessa Redgrave until the 6th of August. And it will then travel to Croatia as part of the renowned Kazalist Ulysses Festival from the 11th until the 13th of August. You can also catch it on the big screen on the 21st of July, as it will be broadcast in selected cinemas around the United Kingdom in association with Picture House Entertainment. And next up, we are heading to the Barbican, where we have more Shakespeare, believe it or not, but perhaps a slightly less apparent format. The Shadow King is an Australian play that's just hit London, and it's loosely based on the storyline of King Lear. Dominic, how has this text been used to create what I'm assuming is quite a different interpretation of the play?
It's sort of between the two. It is actually very closely based on King Lear in terms of its story. Where it departs is in terms of the dialogue. They allude to some Shakespearean lines, some of the famous lines from the play, but they don't actually use Shakespearean text. And in the setting, it's in the, I think you'll know much more about this than me, than the Northern Territories of Australia, that King Lear himself is a sort of Aboriginal tribal leader, although it's set in the modern day, so he's kind of like a faded disco king, is how he comes across. There's a wah-wah guitar playing, there's a band, he sort of shimmies down the steps. He looks like a guy who's been used to sort of dominating groups, being the funny guy in the group for all of his life until, well, he comes and makes a big catastrophic cock-up, as King Lear does.
Now, I understand it is set in the Indigenous Australian community, as you say, and a lot of the Indigenous languages are used to get the point across. Mm. How does that really translate to the Shakespearean text, though? Because you say that it's quite heavily based on Shakespeare. Is it really just change of setting?
Yeah, the plot is, well, there may be tweaks and condensations, but the plot is, it is King Lear, but the dialogue is not King Lear. The dialogue is, there are a few bits of Creole thrown in, but those are really decorative. It's modern English, it's vernacular, it's very recognisable, and I had two mixed feelings about that. I mean, don't get me wrong, we're talking about length. I mean, this comes in at about 90 minutes, and King Lear can go well over 3 hours. So
we do have an adaptation this time then.
We do, yeah. You'll be happy with this one. So that's great. You know, the story still has a sort of apocalyptic feel about it, particularly as it goes along. It gets in your bones. The horror of everything gets there. However, you know, I think with King Lear, it's really about, perhaps most of all Shakespeare's plays, it's about the verse more than the story. It's a very, you know, it's not a play I liked until I understood that it's almost a kind of an abstraction. It's almost a kind of meditation. And there are some great, you know, I don't wish to malign Tommy Lewis, who stars in it and adapted it with the director Michael Cantor, when I say that they're not as good at dialogue as William Shakespeare was.
What a pity.
Yeah. They're not bad at dialogue, but there is a lack of poetry, lack of lyricism about it deliberately, which just makes it a slightly bigger ask for you to get into the mindset here. They do it in the end. And it's definitely one of those shows that I started off feeling lukewarm about and at the end sort of thought, no, okay, I get it. I'm glad I saw this. But I think because of that, I think it's, you know, it's a good show rather than a great show.
Australia is famously awful at relating to its Indigenous population and its Indigenous history. Did you sense any sort of commentary to do with that sort of topic in the depiction of this King Lear in an Indigenous setting?
I think there's some sort of, I jotted down some sort of line that the Lear character, I forget what he's called here, I think he's called Lear. He says, I'm fed up of playing the white man's game, as a sort of justification for why he wants to chop up his territory between his three daughters. That's very much on the periphery, though. To be honest, you would probably pick up more of a political thing than I do, or that most British audiences would. That's not, it gives it a very specific setting, but as often with these things, you know, it's specific to make it universal.
I see. So let's talk about the director then, Michael Cantor, that you just mentioned. I understand this picked him up a Helpman Award, quite a prestigious theatre award in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, it's very creative. Like I say, there is this funk band on stage, and they're mixing up, I guess, what you call Indigenous Australian music with funk music, with pop music. And that's actually a very important part of the show. I think what it loses in the Shakespearean lyricism, it actually increasingly, as it goes in, it fills that gap with this music. And some of it very heartfelt and sort of gorgeous singings, and didgeridoo comes in later. And some of it, like, you know, waka waka, and it's just lending it a kind of sense of fun, a kind of sense of the gaudiness of this character in his white jumpsuit.
Interesting, interesting. Well, that is The Shadow King. It's on at the Barbican until the 2nd of July. So you'd better move fast if you want to catch that one. Now, finally, we're going to end up at the Playhouse Theatre for the touring production of Orwell's 1984. Now, this play has been hugely popular since it premiered in Nottingham in 2013. And it's been to America and even Australia and has been performed to over a quarter of a million people. Dominic, what's the secret here? Why is everyone going mad for 1984?
It's great. I mean, I saw it at the Almeida, I think it was, 2.5 years ago, so that was on the first tour, and I just completely knocked me out. And I think adaptations, I don't know about you, but when you see a book's been adapted, you sort of set at how good can this be, you think. I'm sure it'll be very worthy and yada yada.
Sometimes it feels like it's just trying to piggyback on the popularity of something else, improving upon it.
Yeah, and maybe it feels like sort of theatrical Eat Your Greens or a bit of music. I like 1984, I'll go and see this. Mm. And what the directors and adapters, Duncan McMillan and Robert Icke, have done is made it, on the one hand, being very faithful to the book, on the other hand, mash it up, move things around, made it a thoroughly theatrical experience. What they've done is they put the audience into Winston's mindset. They've used various tricks, some almost sort of conjuring tricks or with staging, to disorient us as he is disorientated. It's set, first of all in one setting, in this sort of wood-panelled 1940s room, doubles up as the canteen and his rooms and whatever, and as the antique shop they visit. But everything's happening here as if it's all the same room. And then, and I don't want to give too much away, that disappears at a certain point. There are certain extraordinary coup de théâtre, forgive me, I'll say it again, coup de théâtre. I hate people who use pretentious French words. I'll use it twice to make it better. There we go. And it just assaults the senses in the nicest way.
Now, I understand that, I mean, look, just to pick up on the themes of it, it does feel as though it is just becoming more and more relevant with the way our politics are going today. But from my understanding, I have not seen the play, but I have been told about a particularly gory scene that has prompted some people to pick up and leave the theatre. What were your impressions upon that?
I think the violence is done very well, actually. It's delayed. It's kept back for the last, whatever it is, half hour when we get to room 101. I'm trying to think what that bit would be, actually. There is a bit where...
So none of it really stuck out to you as particularly gory?
Well, no. I mean, several bits did. There are fingernails are involved. Teeth are involved.
I see.
A cage supposedly full of rats being held up to the face is involved. You don't actually see anything. I think, to be honest, my suspicion is that would be particularly upsetting because the play is so effective, because it gets you into that mindset. You know what it's like with stage violence. A lot of the time you sit back and think, but if the play is working, then you'll go with it. And in this case, definitely is. You feel like you're being interrogated, and you really get a sense of how a body and a mind can be broken down. You get a very vivid sense of that.
Well, that is 1984. It's been touring the UK and is currently on at the Playhouse Theatre here in London until the 29th of October. Now, that indeed does bring us to the end of today's show. Very special thanks to my guest, Dominic Maxwell. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our book review with Charmaine Lovegrove. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.